PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another year of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and how fitting is it? First guy of the year is one of our favorites on the show, mostly because he loves to heckle people both on and off the golf course in the nicest way possible. It's Mr. Jason Finley. Jason, what's up, buddy?
Oh, you know, nothing. I haven't been, you know, nothing's been going on, and, you know, just kind of hanging out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you did the same thing I did a month ago. You sort of watched from the sidelines, although you did get to get a little bit localized. You were, I guess you call it in-house or on location for the excellent granddaddy you guys put on in the 2025 version. Was it weird looking at it from the other side?
100%, yeah. Right? Like, you know, for me, I mean, I'm still very much around it and involved, right? I think I talked to Austin more in the month and change leading up to it than I had in the 9 months before that. But it's obviously something I'm passionate about, right? So I, you know, want to be involved however I can. And it was a bummer for me not to get to play, right? First one I've missed. So, I think it went great. Austin did an amazing job and rest of the team too. So it was really fun to see it come to life. And, you know, it's a little different every year and there's always things that come up. And I kept telling Austin that he was so worried about it just going perfectly. I'm like, buddy, like something's going to happen, right? You just got to kind of deal with it. And, you know, you guys don't even know most of the time what we're trying to solve on the back end, but you know, just deal with it and move on. So, but it was cool to see, like, you know, when I wasn't out there, I was being able to more closely watch the forum live than I ever have been. Right. I always read every single, you know, post, but usually it takes me till about the end of the year to get through it. And I was definitely through it a little bit quicker this time because I was able to follow along more closely along the way. So that was fun.
Yeah. Well, to give people an idea, the Granddaddy is a crazy event. If you're living under a rock, you don't know about it. Callaway and THP put on this unbelievable experience for a bunch of random golfers from the internet who win contests and get to get fit for, check out the location, and then go play ridiculous golf with the guys from Callaway. And every year it's chaos, especially in person, but also on the forum. You got to see it a little differently this year where you got to see sort of firsthand how quickly the forum moves. Thousands upon thousands of posts from everyone else who's a part of the community wanting to get involved and follow along. My only regret this year was that you were actually responding to my questionable comments fairly quickly rather than me getting like a couple days worth of grace period before I had to deal with your wrath. That was sort of disappointing, but it also kept me in check too, which is really fun. But from my angle, this is always that opportunity to hear about what's coming out from you guys. And the fun part is you get these guys, some of them may have been fitted 100 times before. Some of them may have never been fit for a golf club or golf ball, which, you know, imagine that, golf ball, you're on the show. So it's always interesting to hear their instant reactions, even though they can't really talk about it, but also like, you get a true sense of how much of an impact it has on an individual because you can, it's amazing what you can read in those posts. So I'm assuming that's a little bit of what you're looking for, but also the reaction to that.
Yeah, I know, you know, for us, it's obviously, you know, it is great to, you know, this is outside of, you know, our tour players in some cases, some of them haven't even started getting into the products yet, right? Like that starts to happen for most of them, you know, around early December too. It's the first time we're getting kind of, you know, we have our internal testing and things like that, but to get kind of real world, you know, golfer feedback on, you know, not only what we're pitching, but, you know, what they think of the product. So that's always, you know, exciting for us. And I mean, honestly, it's a true benefit to the event for us, but for the people that get to participate in it, I think. So all that's really cool. And, you know, I particularly, you know, you hear some of it when you're there. And I was able to go to the ECPC for a little bit when they were getting fit. So, you know, I was around it, but then when you hear it in person and then kind of go back and see what they're saying on the forum, It's cool. And to see the questions that people are asking and the way they react to it too.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think the fun part about your realm, which effectively is golf ball, right, is I think people, they're very funny when they talk about golf ball, because you're either incredibly critical about what the ball is doing, or there's a level of indifference that exists when things are going okay. And yep. then every once in a while you hit that shot. And I feel like it's more into a green where the ball just grabs and dances a little bit. And suddenly that's like the only thing that's occurring is the perfect golf ball has suddenly existed. So I'm curious about your optics there, because you did spend a little bit of time out at the golf course as well, probably watched a few of the balls come into the greens. What is that like when you start to see all that hard work culminate into the results on the actual golf course?
Yeah, I think it's twofold, right? So yes, the golf course, and I've probably said this on this very podcast in the past, of, you know, the golf course is always going to be the best place to truly evaluate a golf ball, right? Because you're able to hit the different shots, the shots that you know, maybe are good at, the shots that you may be bad at, because I think those are kind of the two ways you can really focus on which ball you should be playing, of how do you optimize what you're good at, or how do you make what you're bad at better, right? And hopefully in some cases it's both, but I think, you know, the golf course is truly the best place to evaluate a golf ball and how it fits you. So to see that in real life, you know, the second part of it, and there was a lot of talk of this in the forum, is we've done a lot of these, what we call Chrome Tour challenges, with a big point of emphasis being speed for us and this line in particular, but it always has been. And we've literally taken thousands of people from our, you know, customers to, you know, consumers to now, you know, the Granddaddy group through this challenge. And it's pretty simple. It's hit our ball, hit a competitive ball or two. And we're going to tell you how much faster we are, you know, on good strikes. So it takes a little bit longer with some people to get those 3 to 4 good strikes. But really to give it a true evaluation and just show people the speed benefit that we have. I think the number was 2.5 or 2.7 miles an hour that the average of the Granddaddy group, which, you know, that's probably a little high from what we would expect based on our robot data. But, you know, for people, if you can show them that, no one's going to turn that down, right? That's always going to be an eye opener for someone. Even tour players, right? If you can, they wouldn't probably voice to you that they're looking for more speed, because that wouldn't be at the top of their list. But if you can show them that, then they're in, right? Because they're never going to turn that down. So it's really been cool to see that, but also, you know, see people out on the golf course with it and, you know, hearing the things that, because everybody talks about something a little different, like what you say may be different than what I say, because we all play the game slightly differently. So I think that's what's so interesting to me too, because all that kind of feedback helps as we talk about future products and things like that we may want to address. Like that's a key part of that.
It's also incredibly satisfying, right? Like I remember being at the AI launch event for putters. Yeah. And while we didn't get to play golf, I was fortunate enough to join Mr. Michael Verska in a round. We saw you at one point stuck on a hole, and you walk over your bag and you pull out this, you know, white sleeve. As everyone in the business knows, that means something I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And you give me this sly grin. You go, "Hey, try these." You said, "Don't judge this and this and this. Just try them. Tell me what you think." I get a sense that you really get a kick out of hearing what people think.
Yeah,
after
sure.
You get to that point of the release. Yeah,
for sure. Like, I mean, we're, you know, post launch, as soon as we start getting a lot of feedback, right? And even in, you know, the forums, you hear, you know, you see a little bit of people that it's gotten out there a little bit. People have tried it. You know, all of our staffers have it, and, you know, not our touring professionals, but our staff professionals, you know, that work at, you know, clubs and things around the country. So it's getting out there, and the feedback's been amazing, which, you're right, to me is like, that's the coolest part, right? It's because it's not just a few of us maybe internally that have tried it or looking at, I mean, I can give you all the data in the world that tells us it's better, but if that doesn't translate to real life, then nothing really matters.
Yeah, I mean, it's that actual on-course validation that makes all those hours worth it, arguing about skews and style and material and et cetera, et cetera. I think we've teased enough, Jason. I think people need to know what this ball is. And frankly, I haven't had the full exposure to it yet either. So I'm incredibly excited to understand the what and the why. But I'll start us off here and say that it seems like the story this year is about being faster and optimizing a new material in order to get there. So can you start at where you guys began with this process and walk us through how you actually landed on it?
Yeah. So let's go even further back if I can to start.
And yes.
Say we have definitely. A new Chrome Soft, Chrome Tour, Chrome Tour X coming. You know, those who follow along even remotely close know we're on 2-year life cycle on our golf balls, right? So those are all due to be new this year. And you're right. The biggest thing, if I were to, you know, and I've given this presentation probably no less than 50 times now, is, you know, if you walk away with anything, it's that all these balls are faster and more consistent than the prior generation, right? Like, if I tell you anything, that's the elevator pitch, if you will. But the speed is a really key component. And that's why, like, those Chrome Tour Challengers are so important, is because we're showcasing that. So you're right. We have been working for over 4 years now with our material suppliers to come up with a new material for the Mantle to help us make the ball faster. You know, we've talked in years past about, you know, the easiest way to make any ball faster is just to make it harder, right? But we're pretty confident in the, I'll call it the zone in which our balls sit, you know, and, you know, we have all the way from a, you know, high 70s to high 90s within our line. And we're pretty confident in where the, each of those balls fit within that range. So we didn't really want to sacrifice just making them firmer to get more speed. And if you do that, that also comes with some other challenges, like it raises spin and, you know, all those things. So this new material, we're going to be the only ones using it in the industry. And we've been working on it for 4+ years now, really with the goal of bringing a material that is faster within a given compression. And it also allows us to then, you know, work on the other variables and levers that we can pull within the ball itself. So whether that's the core or the cover, to really make sure that we're optimizing or getting to where we want with the spin profile that we have. So for example, on Chrome Soft and Chrome Tour, the spin profile, I would say, for those two balls is pretty comparable to where it's been in the past. We've had very good feedback on that and didn't really want to change that. And if we just use this new material, we would have gotten some differences there. So we're able to kind of get that in the right zone. And then on the Chrome Tour X, you know, that's our most played ball on tour. Obviously, you know, significant speed advantage on the competition. So you're building on that. And we've actually been able to lower the spin in what I would call the longer end of the bag. You know, let's call that driver through whatever your longest iron ends up being, you know. Doubtful I would say that's a 3-iron anymore. Even on tour, it's not even a 4-iron all the time. So you know, whatever, wherever that piece of your bag is, lower that spin a little bit, because that's going to help with distance, but then maintain what we had around the green, which is where that ball really shines. Because, you know, short irons and around the green, the X has the most spin. And, you know, for you know, better players, players that need a little more spin, that's really important. So you know, all that, but the new material is really what's driving the speed gains that we're seeing.
Interesting.
Yeah, we call it our Tour Fast Mantle, because it's going to be in the outermost mantle of the golf ball. So in the case of Chrome Soft, it's the mantle. And in the case of Chrome Tour, Chrome Tour X, it's the outer mantle of that. So, you know, you combine that with potentially, you know, softer core, softer cover, to right to get back into that zone that we're looking for at the same level.
It's very interesting. You talked about a new material, but there's always that concern. You don't want to be the one product that's completely different from a feel sound perspective than everyone else. And, you know, I actually was just at a friend's house, and in the basement they have what are very commonly known as the old Rock Flight 2000s. And I could hear them hitting it with a putter on their little putting green. I'm like, how do you do that? It just sounds miserable. And that's made me think, like, as much as you want the players who are in your ball to have extreme performance and improvements over your last iteration, you don't want to separate yourself so much that people aren't willing to try it, whether or not they'd get used to a different sound or feel or whatever it may be. So What's that like when trying to utilize new material? Is there a big impact on the sound or feel that would come with it?
There can be. In this case, you know, we are very confident, and you know, all of our feedback has been that, you know, there's no feel difference. Obviously, you know, compression is the measure that people usually talk about there. That is the same, but you know, you could have two balls at the same compression that feel and sound very differently. Mm-hmm. But so yeah, we do a lot in that area. And I'd say, you know, when we say we've been working on a material for 4 years, it's not just the development of that material. It's making sure that then we can take that material and integrate it into our designs. And also, guess what? We got to be able to make that thing and make, you know, millions of them, you know, and make them consistently. So that's all part of that process to make sure that we end up in that same zone where we were. And one of the key things we wanted was, now that we're kind of settled in where we are with the Chrome Tour family, is we didn't want to confuse players, right? You've seen this over time with some other brands where, you know, if you were an X person before, now all of a sudden you're not. We're pretty confident that if you played Chrome Tour X before, you're going to play Chrome Tour X again. If you played Chrome Tour before, you're going to play it now. You played Chrome Soft before, you're going to play it now. So that was important to us too, because we didn't want to make it more confusing for players than it already is.
Yeah. See, that was the thing that you messed with my head a bit, because I was always a Chrome Soft guy, and you said, "Hey, try this fancy new Chrome Tour ball. You're going to love it." I'm like, okay, Jason, I'm sure that's what will happen. Yeah, whatever.
That's my job to say, right?
Yeah. I'll be back to Chrome Soft and be as happy as can be. And sure enough, Chrome Tour is a ridiculously good ball that seems to check off a lot of boxes. Uh-huh. I think it'd be really interesting to give you an opportunity to describe the three balls that you sort of mentioned, that a lot of the tour guys were into the X model.
Yeah. And there's most played, at least. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and it's some significant speed shift on certain parts of the bag, but let's say it's just an everyday consumer going out looking for a ball. What do you think would be like the key elements of each ball that they'd be looking for?
So I think let's start with the X, just because we were just talking about that. It is our highest spinning ball, you know, through the bag, honestly. Like we've dropped it at the top end, as I described, but it's still going to spin a little bit more than Chrome Tour and Chrome Tour and Chrome Soft off the driver. And the reason why that's super important is, you know, particularly if you're mentioning tour, right? Like think about the golf courses they play, and we all may think we're playing hard golf courses, but they play a very different style game than 99% of the people, maybe more, that are watching this, right? Like they're playing on super firm greens and very tucked hole locations. And they're trying to hit it to those locations, right? So having that spin and control is really important to them. Whereas, you know, more, I'll include myself in this these days, the everyday golfer, right? You know, if I can hit it to 15, 20 feet on every hole, I'm happier than happier than anything, right? And I like my chances of playing pretty well if I can do that. But, you know, so that spin really helps with the workability. Then as you move into Chrome Tour, slightly softer feeling, right? So it's, you know, right about 90, 91 compression. And it's going to provide that nice mix of not being too soft, not being too firm. And it's also going to be, you know, it's in the middle of our lineup, if you will, for a reason, right? It's going to spin less than Chrome Tour X, you know, particularly in the, you know, long to mid part of the bag. And then, you know, but still has tremendous spin around the green. And then as you move into Chrome Soft, I unfortunately probably am including myself in this these days, but, you know, it's going to really be helpful for the players that have, you know, lost some speed, maybe are a little higher handicap than they used to, right? You can see why I'm describing myself now. But they still want all the benefits of a tour ball, you know, with a urethane cover that they can spin around the green and hit shots around the green. So, you know, I even found myself last year before I stopped playing Chrome Soft a lot of the times, because I hit it higher, right? It feels a little bit better to me at, you know, particularly at lower speeds. And, you know, we would never describe it this way, but it's actually a little more forgiving, I think, because it is that slightly lower spin profile. So particularly on those longer clubs, right, your miss hits are going to be a little bit better as well.
Yeah, I always loved it because I called it pancake golf, where you just sort of land the ball on the green like it's a pancake. It's not going to have a ton of zip, but at the same time, it's not going to go far when it does land.
Correct.
That was my favorite thing, because you know me, I hit the ball so bloody high. My descent angle, it's not really going anywhere when it lands, and that's the one thing I love. But also the way you can compress that thing is nuts. But you know what sold me, and this is the problem. This is why golfers are so stupid. And again, I'm including myself in this. Yeah. Is it was the Quail Hollow, the Queen City ball last year, with the B on it and the QC or the QH on it. Yeah. That one got me hooked into Chrome Tour. It wasn't just like me going and playing a blank dozen. It was this really wicked looking golf ball that I started playing a bunch, and I'm like, oh, I do like this ball. Maybe I like to look at it more than I like the ball. I don't really know, but it continued throughout the year. I'm like, okay, maybe Jason was right. Maybe he had some.
That's a good example of why we do those, right?
Yeah.
You know, as much as we like, you know, it's fun. It creates energy and excitement throughout the year, but we're pretty confident that when we do those drops, it actually gets people that maybe would not have otherwise trying our ball. So that's a big part of the reason why we do those.
Okay. I wanted to ask, because I actually have right in my hand, I had one of the Turnbox balls, you know what I'm talking about? The bag of chips.
Yeah.
Can you see it?
Yeah.
It's hard to see.
Yeah. Yep.
So I actually took this to a member guest last year, and everyone was asking questions and sort of laughing at me because it's such a ridiculous concept. Like, I'm here at this serious tournament playing my round two with a hamburger for a golf ball. But, you know, that's sort of me, and it makes it a lot of fun. You can take your ball and go to something serious and have a lot of fun with it and get a lot of really interesting interactions. So as much as I want to continue talking about the new product, I'd really love to hear how this progression has gone with some of these really unique one-off sort of styles, and whether we'll see that continue.
You will definitely see it to continue. So we'll start there. But it really, you know, started with, you know, going all the way back to when we had Truvis, right? And first ones to kind of play in that space, and, you know, people loved it. And early on, it was, we killed it with it. And kind of the next evolution of that was, you know, the next generation, I'll call it, of the logo ball, right? Everybody's forever seen the logo ball with, you know, golf ball with logo on the side and that. And pretty quickly, we started a custom Truvis program that we scaled up over time. I mean, the minimum order for the first runs that we did was 500 dozen. So kind of limited, you know, that, but it also gave us a chance to make sure we could do it and all those things. To now where we're down, you know, more in the 48 dozen range for an account to be able to order those. But then kind of the next evolution of that was doing these, you know, custom ones. And, you know, really in the beginning, we wanted to focus on, let's call it, moments in time more than anything else, like, you know, whether it was around a major or a holiday or something like that. But now it's also getting into things that are popular. You know, like one of the best ones that we've done, a couple stand out, and they both will include the same word, but that when we did the hot dog one the very first time, which was the precursor to the Turnbox, like, you know, and I can't tell you how many times we got laughed at presenting it internally, right? Like, we're doing what? Like a hot dog ball, right?
Yeah.
So it, you know, that one did very well. And then the other one that did really well, and we've brought it back a couple times, is the dog series that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it kind of evolved into this thing where, you know, what are people passionate about? And that can come in many different shapes and forms, right? And even when we first started talking about the dog ball, we started talking about, okay, let's do one with four different breeds of dogs within it, right? And then we kind of said, well, wait a minute. If you're a lab guy or a retriever guy, you don't want the other one, right? You want all of yours. So then we end up with four SKUs or five SKUs instead of one. But, you know, that one did tremendously well too. Because it's stuff that people are passionate about, right? And I'll be honest, right? Some have done much better than others have. Some that I really liked that I thought would do very well didn't do very well. So it's evolved over time. But, you know, it's some of the most fun we can have is coming up with the different stuff we can do around that. And I think one of the first things that really surprised me was The first time we really did this of any significance, like in the marketplace, was in the fourth quarter of 1 year. We did three of these. We did a Steph Curry one around his foundation, right? And had agreement from him that he was going to, you know, post about it on social and all that. You can imagine how many followers he has. Like, ooh, that's a great idea, right? We'll crush it with that. And then we did the umbrella around Mr. Palmer. And then we did something with Amanda Baliones. We partnered with, you know, she supports puppies and golf. So we did the dog paw. And, you know, going into it, I think everybody kind of thought like, oh, Steph Curry with all his followers and everybody loves him, you know, that'll do great. Mr. Palmer's Mr. Palmer, right? Like everybody will celebrate that. That'll do great. But dog paw by far and away crushed it. Like, so, I mean, it's just fun to see how it happens. But that was kind of the first signal we had that there was something there. And, you know, obviously the technology that we have has enabled us to do that. But we're evolving, right? We went from just having him in a blank, you know, Chrome Soft Chrome Tour box, whatever it was, into doing the black package with the oversleeve. Now we're kind of evolving into full custom packaging for each one. So the team's done a really nice job of getting us to where that is. And now we're going to have five of them that are available at retail next year, in addition to the ones we'll do just on our website as well. So it's really a fun way for us to kind of showcase some different stuff and, you know, find out what people are passionate about. And some maybe ideas we'll bring back or redo in a slightly different way, but it's fun. And those are some of the more fun meetings we have, is some of the brainstorming sessions around what we could do with those for sure.
Right. Well, the moment in time stuff is really interesting. I mean, we've experienced that with the granddaddy. I've had a couple different iterations of the ball that references the experience, yep. But then these major balls are, I think, a really good example because you've really highlighted the locations that they're occurring so that it's not one of those things like, well, it's going to look the same every year because it's the PGA or because it's the US Open. Well, actually you're featuring the locations, which I think is really cool. With the exception of the Pittsburgh balls, that was a huge miss for us here in Ohio. So, but well, you can't win them all, Jason.
Get yourself a major.
No kidding.
Yeah, but you know where I did really well?
Pittsburgh. Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah, I got a brother-in-law who may or may not listen to this, who will be thrilled I even referenced his city in my show. So, that's interesting. But the other part of that, and I'd love to talk that kind of concept for a while, especially heckle you about a certain Toronto Blue Jays team I'd love to have on a ball. But I am also curious.
It's a little complicated with licenses and things
licenses,
like that.
But when it comes to your ability to print on the golf ball, that's actually evolved your ability to incorporate things like triple track or some of your other variances. Now, are you guys really finding the right window for what you want on these golf balls? And have you landed on a certain select number of SKUs to make that happen, or is it still sort of open?
Well, we're not done trying new things. I promise you that.
Sure.
I think what you'll see in the 2026 offering is pretty comparable to where we have been, right? So you'll be able to get it in standard, you know, white and yellow ball. You'll be able to get it in triple track. You'll be able to get it in 360 triple track. You'll be able to get it in true track, and in the yellow stripe as well. So all those things will still be in the lineup this year, in the new chrome balls. But it's definitely an area that we don't think is going away. We've definitely seen an increase, you know, not even just from ourselves, but you see it industry wide, right? More people are doing things like this. And I would say that kind of follows the general consumer as well. Like, I mean, look at the way, you know, people do weird stuff to their cars, whether it's wraps or anything like that, right? Like everybody's got their own taste and flavor to what they want. So I think it definitely is here to stay, and it's an area that we're going to continue to try and build on. And frankly, in some cases, just have a lot of fun with too, because we all need a little bit more of that in our lives.
And that's part of the fun of it, right? Like we customize our ferrules or our head covers or our gloves or our apparel. And like, why not be the golf ball? I think back to all the really funny experiences I had this year because of the Chrome Tours I've used. Even the one you've got a Truvis looking ball with all the little dots, goes from blue to red, you know what I'm talking about? I don't know
the name of it. Yeah, that's True Track. Yep.
Well, True Track. And people, they look at it, they're like, oh, what is this 8-bit craziness I'm looking at? But then again, they keep looking at it. You know, it's that yep. funny component that it always starts a fun conversation.
Yep.
Or people just sort of get used to it. And that's that's what's really fun. And that's what I think people need, especially in these like break the ice kind of moments.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, it's been a huge way for us to get people to try our golf ball that maybe wouldn't have otherwise, right? I mean, it's no surprise that this is a tough category, right? And there's a pretty, you know, long time, pretty dominant player in the category. And, you know, this has been a great way for us to kind of chip away at that lead and gain some market share of our own, such that, you know, again, this year or last year, we were able to hit our all time market share high again. So wow. Certainly that stuff's played a role in that for sure. And I would say even, you know, we're bringing it more throughout the lineup, right? You know, on ERC Soft today, you can get it in Triple Track or Truviz, even in Super Soft, right? We have not only the matte colors there, but we did some fun stuff, you know, with the 12 Days of Christmas and the Advent calendar on that one this year and stuff like that. So we're doing it different ways within the lineup too. And it makes it more fun for everybody. And, you know, imagine, that Advent golf ball did amazingly well, right? Like, and there was a little hesitation from people about it. And, it's just another way to have fun. And, you know, it's great that we can talk about, you know, the distance of our balls or, you know, how great they feel and all those things. And certainly consistency is a huge kind of secondary part to the new lineup in particular. But at the same time, I think that stuff kind of gets lost on people sometimes. So it's just another fun way to insert yourself into the conversation, to your point, right? Of you probably wouldn't have been talking about your golf ball if you just had a plain white golf ball, right? So
it's just a golf ball until it's not, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny. I'd love to hear the tour side of it as well, because I know they're, at least compared to like the average consumer, they might be able to take golf a little bit more seriously considering it, you know, feeds the family. How flexible are they on what they're willing to use out there, whether it's the Truviz style or more likely the Triple Track? What's the feedback out there from them?
I would say they're definitely more in the traditional space. You've seen a lot more with lines, I would say. And, you know, even, you know, you see some players that are playing other balls that have something that I would at least say loosely resembles Triple Track. But it's definitely become slightly more on tour, but it's still, you know, it's still dominated by what I would call the traditional golf ball. So I think it depends on the person a little bit. You know, some are more open to it than others. And, you know, some wouldn't even give it they don't even want to look at it, right? Which that's the same case with consumers too, right? Some would show that bag of potato chips that you showed earlier and I would never play that, right? Okay, fine, right? Like, but I think it's given us another way to do that. So tour players, I would say, have been slower to adopt than consumers, certainly. But on any given week, you know, we have 20-30% of our staff playing a Triple Track ball for sure.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that was one of the things you guys refined over the last couple of variations. You tighten up the lines a little bit on the endpoints, yep, and sharpen them. Mm-hmm. Yep. Are you still getting that kind of feedback? Are they pretty satisfied with where it is right now? What's that like?
Yeah. Those that use it, definitely are. And I think even, you know, consumers, you know, cause they were kind of like blocked off, I guess I'll call it. And you know, if you look at, you know, it's hard to be able to draw a point that precise if you're using a Sharpie, right? So it also gives a benefit to those that say, well, I can just put this on with a Sharpie. Well, it's like, you might be surprised at how much you can really do of that and how it's not quite as exacting as maybe it is if it's put on by a machine. But, you know, we're continuing to look at stuff like, should we put a single line in maybe some different colors and sell it? Should we, you know, do all those things? So it's, mm-hmm, it's all open, right? And that's the fun part. But, you know, the balance or the counterpoint to that is we also have to make sure not to have our line get so obnoxiously large, particularly in the retail environment. Or imagine your average golf shop you walk into, right? They're only going to carry so many SKUs that they just don't have room to carry all of them. So, you know, you don't want to make it such that, you know, you're giving people an opportunity to not buy your ball either. So it's a balance for sure.
I like that you did, it was a collaboration with Dick's Sporting Goods where they had the green and black purple track. That was really cool. But one of the things Jason's not saying is at least a couple times a year, I text him a picture of a very poorly done triple track on a non-Callaway golf ball. And I don't know if he likes it or hates it, but either way, I get a reaction out of him. So it's worth it for me.
But it kind of makes me laugh, right? Yeah. Like, and you know, there's a lot in play there with people have contracts and you know all that nonsense, right? Because it's like, hey, look, you can play our ball and we'll do it for you kind of thing. But yeah, there's definitely something there. But you know, it's kind of like tour in general, right? They're pretty set in their ways and what their expectations are and what they're looking for in products.
Well, I'll tell you what, it looks really, really interesting. I'm incredibly curious about the new material. And the way you've been talking about it, the way the guys on THP talked about it when they came out and experienced them for the self, you touched on the ball speed gains that they had. And I thought that was like, there isn't a year that goes by that people don't go to the Grandaddy where they're blown away, whether it's a first time fitter that doesn't, or first time fitted individual who doesn't realize how much they can gain out of it, or whether it's a group of guys. And I think this year we had the majority of the guys had been through fittings and have clubs that suit their game. To have a collective ball speed gain like that is crazy to me. It's not like a small number. And, you know, you probably have to read this a lot more patiently than I do, but I constantly read these things like, oh, we're not progressing in our technology. The golf ball, the golf club doesn't change year over year. It's just marketing hype. How great is it that you have something like this you can actually reference to say, like, look, we're not claiming we're 17 yards longer anymore or at all. We're saying specifically, this is what happened when these people hit this ball. We're not making it up. This is what happened. That's got to be incredibly satisfying.
Yeah, it's not, you know, I think back to my tenure working in this industry, right, which unfortunately is a lot longer than I would care to admit. But you know, when I first started, you know, it was just like, oh, you could say it was longer. And nobody really had a way to measure that, right? There was no, you know, we had in the very early days, right, like these big hunking, you know, launch monitors that cost, you know, probably millions of dollars for us to develop. And we had two of them, right, at our test center. But now it's not uncommon that people have them in their homes. People can go to just about any retail establishment and use one, see numbers. So it's not that hard to see and compare things, right? So when you have an opportunity like we have right now with such a differentiated advantage over people, you know, finding a way to get that in front of more people is huge, right? Like, and we don't get those opportunities very often as people in this business, right? Yeah, there's things that, I mean, trust me, we will not come out with a product unless it's better than its predecessor. We won't. But how much better is certainly open for debate. And to have this big of a benefit and an advantage to where, you know, even looking at robot testing and being able to say that something's, you know, statistically significant at 95% confidence, like that's meaningful, right? So that's the kind of stuff that we're talking about and we're looking at. And to have it in our product, in the new products, in both speed and consistency is kind of like world class for us, right? Mm-hmm. So we're super proud of what we've been able to deliver. And you know, some of those things, speed for example, is much easier to show people than the consistency part, because you got to kind of go out and experience that part for yourself. And it's a complicated story to tell, but you know, we've been doing a lot of work in the area of, you know, downrange consistency with our products as well. And you know, that's really a combination of technologies that we're applying to the product, like our seamless tour arrow pattern that we have, and how we actually remove that seam, which is different than anybody else does it, which gives us an advantage. But all the other steps along the way of that process, right? Whether it's all the quality controls you have, improving your processes throughout, And to be able to see data that significantly would say that we're better than the competition, that's huge for us, right? So we've done some testing recently, hitting it on the seam and cross seam. And the average difference in us is about 3 feet. So if you think about what that means to where we have the most data is on tour, right? So at 3 feet, they're making, 99.5% of those putts. And then let's call it the next competitor, if you will, is about 10.5 feet. Okay. So then your make percentage goes down to about 40 feet. And then the next one's 15 feet, start to think about what that means to the best players in the world, let alone you and I, right? Who may not be 3 feet for me, but it may be, may go from 20 to 15, right? And even I'm going to have a much better chance to make it from 15 feet than 20. So I think it really is meaningful, but it's definitely more harder to show that. But I think even just having the confidence and be able to go out and tell that story is really important, and people will see it.
That is one thing I'm incredibly curious about. If you have a bit more time to chat, the idea that golf balls that are made out of urethane are becoming more accessible for different price points. Mm-hmm. But you are talking about something that I believe a number of these manufacturers of these balls, or at least those who are selling them, probably have never even heard of before. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit more about like there's a reason why these are considered some of the best balls in the world. And it's because of these tight tolerances you're introducing, mm-hmm. and the depth of effort you're going into, the material construction, the quality of the construction. Mm-hmm. I mean, all that factors. And what do you say to the guy that says, I'll just use that ball over there. It's way cheaper and I can get a bunch of dozen for, half the price or something goofy like that.
Yep. Well, I think, I would never criticize someone, right? Because I understand, I don't pay for golf balls. I get it, right? So it's pretty easy for me to say, why wouldn't you play this? It's a better ball. But I get the other side of it. But it really comes down to what are you playing the game for, right? If you're playing the game to get better, improve, lower your handicap, win a match or win a bet, whatever it may be, you're going to have the best chance to do it with a ball that has, and it's not just about the amount of money that we spend on R&D, that, which when you compare it to what a lot of these other smaller companies are doing is magnitudes smaller, right? Or if at all, right? A lot of them are made in a factory that they have no control over whatsoever, right? So one of the key areas that we've really focused on is improving in Chicopee. We've talked about this through the years, where we're making those balls. And, it's not just, buying new equipment, developing new processes, but how do you ensure that the product you got a week ago is going to be the same as the product that you get today? We're at the point where we're taking over 1 million data points in that plant a day, right? And we're feeding that all into models that we're able to look at and know that, okay, why did this one get, 2 points compression firmer? Oh, it's because the temperature was 2 degrees higher. So let's figure that, so whatever it may be, but it gives us a much better opportunity to deliver a more consistent product. And then from there, you're able to reduce your tolerances, right? Your specs. So where everything just gets closer and closer, because it's a high volume manufacturing operation. As much as everybody would like to think that every single one is exactly the same and perfect, right? Nothing that's made in that environment is, whether it's a golf ball or a pen or whatever it may be. But the more you can do to deliver more consistency to the golfer, and that's where we've spent a lot of time and energy that, frankly, our scale helps us and probably a few others with, compared to the vast majority of the market.
Yeah, the idea that not all urethane is created the same is usually what my starting point is. Because I struggle with it. The amount of effort that goes into it, the amount of joy I get into understanding and learning these technologies and seeing the variances, and then for it to be sort of discounted, I'm with you. I'll never tell someone to spend their money on something specific, but please don't tell me that they're the same thing is usually what I start with. And if they want to get into a debate on that, that's fine. But if they don't care and they just want to go play golf and where the ball goes, they don't want to use a Sirlin cover, then go buy the the questionable ones that might be different.
Yeah. No, and I think that, you know, again, it's, you know, if I, because as I try to figure out the logic, even from our perspective, right? Like, you know, you're on retired on a fixed income, you play golf 4 to 5 times a week, you know, you're probably losing about a sleeve on average, depending on your handicap, right? Like, that all starts to add up. And I get it, right? I mean, that can be a huge amount of money. But I guess it goes back to what's your purpose in playing? Do you want to be your best and give yourself the best opportunity? Or are you okay just, you know, because it's a cheap urethane ball that you're doing it, right? So, I mean, we all make choices in life in general, but that's definitely a good example of it. But,
sure,
you know, seeing the amount of work that goes into making these products and the work behind the scenes, right, of working on a new material to make it, you know, faster, meaningfully faster, it's real, right? And, you know, I've been sitting in meetings for 4 years where we talk about, you know, innovations we're working on, hearing about this new material that we're working on, and then to see it come to life, right? Because there's 40-50% of them that don't ever come to life, right? Because either it doesn't pan out, or we can't find a way to manufacture it, or whatever the case may be, or we have competing ideas and one's better than the other, right? So that's the part that, to me, you know, being a, you know, I would classify myself still as a golf nerd, right? To see that come to life, you know, that's a cool opportunity. It's cool to see.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, you got me excited. Hopefully those who are listening in are curious to try out the new ball. The Chrome Soft family, the Chrome family has been incredibly fun to follow over the last couple of iterations. And I look forward to seeing what comes out this year from what do you call them? Like a fancy edition, the limited stuff. For whatever reason, man, you got me hooked and I hate it. I used to be a white only golf ball guy and here we are. I can't wait to see what's coming.
Well, you're going to have plenty of choices. So you'll have some good ones. But couple of them I'm really excited about. So
awesome. Well, hey, great to see you. Great to chat with you. Glad to hear you're doing well and look forward to heckling you again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. If you're playing golf this weekend, have fun. Go check out the new golf ball lineup from Callaway. I have no doubt you'll be impressed with what you check out. We'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey everybody, it's Don back here at Shaft University answering another one of your questions. This week's question was, you had a user who was fit into a Ventus Blue but hit the Denali Blue much better. His real question was, can he get 6 yards out of that shaft like the fitter told him? And the answer is yes. 6 yards is not a ton of gain when we start to optimize launch and spin and things of that nature. If you're seeing your club head speed increase, that's something different. But if your club head speed and your ball speed are relatively the same, but you're seeing more yardage, that's definitely about your trajectory, launch conditions, and that can definitely give you 6 more yards. I hope that helps. Talk to you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.